Thank you. We're joined as usual by Rhode Island Public Radio political analyst Scott McKay. Hello, Scott.
Good morning, Rhode Island.
And University of Rhode Island political science professor Maureen Moakley. Good morning, Maureen.
Good morning, everyone.
We're pleased to welcome as our special guest Providence's Ward 14 City Councilor David Salvatore, who represents Wanscuck, Elmhurst, and Mount Pleasant. He's also the chairman of the City Council's Ways and Means Committee. Thanks for joining us, David.
Thank you, folks. Good day, Rhode Island.
The financial condition of Providence is emerging as an issue in the Democratic race for governor. Gina Raimondo's campaign has invoked the specter of Detroit in criticizing rival candidate Angel Taveras. Taveras says he's wiped out most of the $110 million deficit he inherited, but there's still a lingering deficit of close to $10 million. David Salvatore, I imagine you're supporting Angel Taveras for governor. How do you see this issue of Providence's financial condition playing in the Democratic primary?
Well, folks, as you know, Providence started our term in 2011 with a $110 million structural deficit. That structural deficit has been erased. And last year, the city has incurred a $1.6 million surplus.
Not wholly erased, though.
There is a $9 million cumulative deficit. Those are deficits that were created during the 2011 and 2012 budgets. And in accordance with state law, that money has to be repaid back to the city's budget. And in next year, that represents $3.3 million. Obviously, that's $3.3 million that can be used towards city services. But again, where we started in 2011 and where we are today is night and day. So I'm very proud of the work that has been accomplished by both the mayor and the city council. And the governor's race is important in terms of the compatibility between who the governor is going to be in the state of Rhode Island and where we're in the direction we're going to move in the city of Providence.
What do you say, Scott, about how Providence's financial condition plays in the race for governor?
Well, obviously, the general treasurer is going to try to use this against Mayor Taveras. That makes sense. It's the silly season, however, and we know these things get batted back and forth, and the councilman's correct. If you want to talk about the specter of Detroit, you've actually got to roll the reel back to 2010 and look at former Mayor David Cicilline, who I think may be supporting the general treasurer. It was his administration that actually drove the city into this river of red ink. And I think since then, what Mayor Taveras and the current councils had to do really is try to bail out a very leaky boat.
How about it, Maureen?
I tend to agree. I mean, I really think that Ms. Raimondo may have some things she wants to criticize Angel Taveras for, but I don't think this one is going to get many legs. In the sense, when you look at the big picture, most people appreciate the fact that he held the line on commercial taxes, the whole idea of raising property taxes. You have to recalibrate that as it comes to the reevaluation. You know, this city was teetering on bankruptcy, and the fact is that it is no longer the case. $9 million over a couple of years is a lot different than $110 million. And I think this is one thing that Angel Taveras can campaign on. I think he's been very credible in terms of his leadership in Providence.
Well, speaking of the Democratic race for governor, Taveras, Raimondo, and their fellow Democrat Clay Pell this week signed a so-called People's Pledge to limit the impact of independent third-party spending in the Democratic primary. Scott, as we know, Raimondo has by far the largest war chest. Is she the big winner from this agreement?
Well, obviously, I think a notion of good government is probably the big winner here. We won't have these outside groups polluting our airwaves with negative advertising. But yes, as far as fundraising goes, Gina Raimondo still is number one. Now, that said, we also have someone who has a pretty deep pockets here. And can Clay Pell go to his ATM machine and grab another $1 million if he needs it? He probably can.
Maureen, what impact do you see from this People's Pledge?
I think it will matter on the margins in the sense that we will limit some of the negative advertising and the outside spending. We may have internal negative advertising.
We will.
So that, and we will definitely have that. But my thing is, I hope it doesn't become a distraction in terms of who decides who spent this money. I mean, we really have to look at the fact that Gina Raimondo has plus three, Clay Pell has plus two, and he can keep continuing going. And I think Angel has near two, and he has enough. So for the primary, it seems to me, in a way, this wasn't a risk for anybody because they all really have enough money as it stands now to really mount a really competitive primary.
David Salvatore, as a Taveras supporter, how do you feel about the mayor's ability to wage an effective campaign with less money than Pell and Raimondo?
Well, I think the People's Pledge is effective on the surface. However, there does have to be some level of accountability in terms of the People's Pledge. In terms of how much money it's going to take to win the gubernatorial race. I don't think you need the most money in the race to win. I think you need an effective message. And when that message resonates with the electorate, you'll be able to garner the support needed to win that race.
As part of Obamacare, expanding Medicaid enrollment for poor Rhode Islanders will cost the state $52 million more than previously projected over this and the next fiscal year. Maureen, can Rhode Island really afford that kind of expanded medical cost when the state always runs deficits each year?
Look, first of all, these are projections, and we don't know how it's going to work out. Christy Ferguson has said that as far as health source is concerned, she can cover the first year. So, and we're talking about how we're going to pay for approximately the estimate of about $20 million. And there's talk about the fact that you can have a user's fee. So it's still in the future. We've done very well enrolling people. We have to figure out how to pay for it, but we don't know what the tab is yet. And I don't think it's going to be as onerous as some of these projections indicate.
David, what do you say about whether Rhode Island can afford these kind of spiraling health care costs, or would it make more sense to farm Obamacare back to the federal government, as at least one other state is doing?
I think we have a potential amplified domino theory here. And if the federal government decides to seize that funding at the state level and you combine that with increased Medicaid costs, that is a potential issue not only for the city of Providence, but all 39 cities and towns. So I'll be looking at this with a watchful eye in terms of the city of Providence's budget.
What do you say, Scott?
I think the problem is not doing this is probably worse than doing it. And the reason is, if you want to control health care costs, these people are going to show up in the emergency room, and there's only two ways to pay for it. One is to shift even more costs to the private insurance payers, the folks who get their insurance either paying on their own or mostly, like most of us, from their employers. Or the taxpayers have to cover it in the form of uncompensated care costs to the hospitals who are just going to have to give out more free care. It's a real problem.
After years of opposition, the House has moved quickly to eliminate straight ticket voting, also known as the master lever. The big question now is whether the state Senate will do the same thing. Scott, how do you see the outlook? And what do you expect the Senate to do with this?
I think the Senate may finally just throw in the towel and get rid of it. But I'm here to tell you, this is much ado about not much. Nothing much is going to change. We've had the master lever for 50 years. We've had it through recessions, depressions, wars. We've had it through times of good economic times, full employment, and bad. It might give the Republicans a chance to win a couple of state rep seats. But let me tell you, we've split tickets for years in this state. Probably the best version is 1964. When they had the biggest landslide in history for the Democrats, Lyndon Johnson, and John Chafee was elected governor as a Republican. So I don't think it's going to. It's a big point for the political bloviators and the Republicans and the conservatives. Let them have their talk. It's not going to mean anything.
David Salvatore, what kind of impact do you think it would have to eliminate the master lever in Rhode Island?
Ian, I don't think the master lever is political or ideological. As Scott said, it's 50 years in the making that we've had the master lever. And in Providence, it impedes, at times, a voter's ability to vote on very critical issues such as referenda. In 2012, there was a $40 million bond referendum on our ballot. The ballot was 3 pages long. We were happy that the electorate overwhelmingly supported that bond referendum. However, I'm curious to know how many folks didn't turn that page and vote for several very important measures.
So it sounds like you agree with people who say the master lever has an effect of making voters lazy in some instances or not really thinking for themselves.
Sure. I'm happy that the House has fast-tracked this, and I hope that the Senate works diligently to eliminate the master lever.
How about you, Maureen?
I tend to agree. I mean, I think it does make a difference in the sense that while 20% of the people use it, it's really interesting. Donna Nesselbush, Senator Nesselbush, said 50% of her constituents use the master lever. We may have had good times and bad times through the master lever, but what we've also had is solid one-party Democratic control of the state, generally speaking. And if you look at New Hampshire, one of the breakthroughs in New Hampshire is when they limited their master lever, the state became more competitive and more Democratic. So I think it's a good thing. I think it's time that we encourage a little bit of competition at the grassroots. And I expect that no one expected this to go as fast as it did. But I think Teresa Pavlovic, the president of the Senate, is in a box, and I think she's going to have to go for it.
We're out of time, so we have to leave it there. Thanks for joining us on Political Roundtable. Scott.
Thank you.
Maureen.
Thank you.
And Providence Ward 14 City Councilor David Salvatore.
Thank you.
We're funded by you, our listeners, and by the Robertson Foundation, continuing the commitment of its founder, Stephen Hamblett, to honest government in Rhode Island through in-depth political coverage. And if you enjoy the conversation, please visit our On Politics blog at ripr.org.